Hello and welcome to From the Rookery, a podcast about life following Watford Football Club. Brought to you by The Athletic. It's Sunday after Watford lost 2-0 away at Huddersfield Town yesterday. And we're going to have a chat about that, what is life at the moment like. With me is Jason.
Good morning.
And Mike.
Yes, good morning. Life as a Watford fan, eh? And we're going to go on to talk about that, but I did want to start, John, I hope you don't mind, but just by saying to everyone listening, really, obviously there are other events in the world. Yesterday, big announcements over the weekend about lockdown and so on and so forth. People's plans changed at the last minute, and it's all of a sudden looking like a very, very difficult period of time for all of us, really. So I just wanted to say to everyone, stick with it, look after each other. And of course, if we can be of any help, you know, we're on social media, do let us know, DMs and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, look after each other, because while we're going to talk about Watford, and it's been a seismic 24 hours for Watford, there are bigger things happening out there. So look after each other.
Yeah, I mean, what I like about this is that it's a distraction. Mm. It's a distraction of the soap opera that is Watford Football Club.
Yeah.
That's always it's always good to have distractions that can help get through things. But Jason, before we get on to the whole thing that we all know we're going to talk about, and the exit of Vladimir Ivic, another Watford manager exited, let's talk about what actually happened yesterday. It was a game away at Huddersfield Town. There were some changes. Troy Deeney didn't start. Andre Gray did. Perica didn't start. He was on the bench also. And from the get-go, it felt a little bit weird. And the game was very weird, wasn't it?
It was strange, wasn't it? I mean, if you looked at the first half, you took the goals away from the first half. We seemed to be playing most of the football. Well, that's probably down to the fact that we gave them two goals, and we did literally give them two goals early doors. And it just seemed to, I don't know, just set a predictable pattern for the rest of the game. You at that point probably knew that Huddersfield would just sit back and soak up the pressure. And usually we had quite a high number of shots. We seemed to be shooting on sight. It was almost as if GT had got into the dressing room and said, you need to get your 10 shots away minimum.
It's a shame that the first two shots went straight into our own feet.
Yeah, that's the trouble. And frankly, I hate to say it, but I almost lost interest in the game. It was terrible yesterday, I thought. It just felt like when we went 2-0 down, I just thought, that's it. I can't see us getting back into the game. It's going to, I knew exactly how it was going to pan out, and it did.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it, Jace? That never mind conceding two. Conceding one is an issue for this side, and to concede two in the fashion that we did, you know, Ben Foster, very difficult to be too critical of him, because he's been superb for large parts of this season. He has dawdled a little bit on the ball. He has got his sort of clearances away increasingly late, and a few people picked up on that yesterday, and obviously that'll be a learning curve for him. At least he's got some close-up video footage to examine of what went exactly wrong. And I did think the Capu own goal was entirely representative of his contribution since he's come back from his inverted commas injury when he didn't surface against Rotherham. He's sort of a sort of half-hearted swipe at the ball, bodied all wrong. Robbo called him out on it quite rightly at half-time. On Hornet Hive, just said it was pathetic. He didn't want to get ahead on it, and he just sort of waved a foot at it, and in it went. I mean, it was pathetic from Capu. And then for us to end up at 2-0 down, we can't come back from 1-0 down. The problem I had from the minute that team took to the pitch was it was the exact opposite of what we knew this team needed. We've all talked about it needing to click. We've all talked about us needing to impose ourselves on a game. That needs some sort of attacking thrust. And you could argue that Saar was playing up top with Andre Gray. It didn't look like it to me. I think Gray was the lone striker. When we've all known that we need to kickstart this somehow. And to do that, we needed to take a gamble. And we went backwards in terms of the approach, I felt. And like you say, Jason, at 2-0 down, you can forget it. You can start wrapping your Christmas presents. You can start on the whiskey. You can start mowing the lawn, whatever. There's no way this Watford side is coming back from that, especially taking into account the nature of the goals. I mean, and how they're going to react.
Yeah, and I felt like I lost interest, and it just felt like team and on the sides they lost interest as well, because the changes that were made later in the game, the sort of switches around in formation, it was almost like it was, let's have a go at this. Let's just try a different formation. Let's are they playing Football Manager or something? Yeah, this isn't working. Let's try 3-5-2. Now let's try 4-3-3. Let's see what happens here. And then changing the fullbacks. That to me just felt like, right, you two need some game time. We're not going to get back into this. Just go out there and get some minutes in your legs. Results gone. It just felt like they'd given up.
They did carve out a couple of sort of scuffles in and around the area, didn't they? There were a couple of sort of decent-ish chances that on another day they might have smuggled in. But I really don't think that if they'd have got back to all, we'd be having any different a conversation about the way the game panned out. It was, it felt to me, you know, everyone that listens to the podcast for the last 10 years will know I'm not a master tactician, but it felt like that team was incorrectly set up to change the course of the season, to change the course of the performances, to change the course of the morale, and to change the course of the belief in the team and the head coach for anyone with a vested interest. It was, it felt to me like, and it's obviously, you know, Captain Hindsight here, it felt like a white flag before we'd even started. Now, admittedly, you know, it was on the Huddersfield Town preview show, which was interesting to get an opposition view. They were still of the view that Watford are obviously doing really well. But Huddersfield had won 3 in a row at home, so they obviously had some confidence at home, but they'd also lost 5-0 at Bournemouth. So we had 2 stats to look at going into that game. Either it's a team with superb home form, or it's a team that's been relegated alongside us, has stuck 5 past them. Now, which one of those stats would you look to sort of hone in on if you were a team going for promotion? I know which one we did, and I know which one we should have done. And, Jace, you said you ran out of patience. I did as well. I watched it. Of course I did. But I know people, plenty of people, who no longer watch. Now, I think there's a whole host of reasons for that. The watching it different, watching it on TV is very, very different to watching it at the game. The John Smith Stadium, it's a magnificent place to go. It's a really great away trip. No doubt Watford would have taken, just before Christmas, Watford would have taken a big away following. So it is different, but it's also different in a lot of other ways, in as much as it's attritional to watch. It's difficult to watch. A, because of the tactics, and I'm afraid to say it, B, because of the performances of the players. It is unpleasant as it is unentertaining, and there's a whole host of issues, a whole host of people to blame, but what's being served up at the moment, what's being served up yesterday, was pathetic.
And that may be the strongest reason, maybe it was the straw that broke the camel's back, but that was the last game that Vladimir Ivic was in charge of as Watford head coach. And late last night, Watford put out a statement saying that he has parted ways. And that's what we're going to talk about next. Surprise, surprise. Let's talk about Ivic first. Vladimir, whatever you want to call him, however much friendly you are with him. Jason, what did he do for you? What did he do wrong in this 20 games or so he was in charge?
Well, that's a big question. I think it's clear to say that we weren't inspired or excited by the football, were we? I don't think I was. There were maybe one or two games where, certainly the Preston game, where we looked like we could cut sides asunder. Other than that, it was, in some cases it was clinging on. In some cases it just felt like we'll get the goal and then we'll just soak it up. We weren't sort of putting teams to the sword. We weren't looking like a team that could sort of run away with the division. It's probably the wrong sort of phrase to use, but with the squad that we've got, we were hoping that we were going to be challenging for automatic promotion, and that may still happen. But we didn't look like we would scare teams. When we announced our squad at the start of the season, okay, there were some names on there that we knew were going to go. And fans of other clubs were looking at it going, wow, that's amazing, that's cheating, that's not fair. The fans were worried about the threat that Watford could cause. You look at the games, we are nowhere near that. And that set us off on the back foot straight away, because teams quite quickly saw they had nothing to fear about Watford. And they could come to Vicarage Road or away from home, and they would be in our faces, and we struggled to deal with that. And that was the way we were set up to play. And that was probably the biggest thing for me.
20 league games this season, and I think I can say without fear of too much contradiction, 18 poor to below average performances out of those, I think. And Jason mentioned there that teams quickly cottoned on to the fact that we weren't going to take the game to them. I think that, you know, Nottingham Forest really springs out at me, a team that were absolutely down on form, down on their luck, really struggling. They realised they could just coast to a point and stop the rot against us because Watford literally weren't going to do anything. They posed no threat in the game. There was no willingness to impose themselves on the game. They may as well have shaken hands after 1 minute and taken the point, saved the kit man a job of washing the kit. Watford get home in an early night. The performances have been insipid, passive, disinterested. And like I say, that the fact that they haven't decided or wanted to or been willing to impose themselves on games has been an affront, I think, to us as supporters. It's been limp, uninspiring. Ultimately, it could well cost them because they find themselves adrift of top spot almost by 10 points. They're lucky it's not more. And, you know, we're talking about the manager at the moment, and some of that, you know, they have to be set up a certain way to go out and play like that. It's safety first, for all Ivic's protestations.
There were several reasons why it was safety first, and I absolutely get that. First one was because this is a new team, he's developing it, and he'd never really had a consistent team. You know, there were many things working against him. He never had a consistent team, and not until 10 games in, whatever it was, mid-October, he didn't have the knowledge of who would be in his squad 100%.
No.
There's no way he could start planning. But then also, he was dealing with a squad that was mentally scarred from last year. Yeah. And there's no getting away from that. And almost in many ways, I see as he had a team that was mentally scarred. But that squad didn't turn up until about late October.
I do have sympathy. Again, I always say this. This season is still being played out against the backdrop of very, very uncertain times. A difficult time for Watford. Relegated, all the nuts and bolts that come with that. The pandemic, all the issues that come with that. Fans in the ground, fans not in the ground. Everything that comes with that. I get it. But he has a sheet of paper and he can look at, right, he's likely to go. You know, he will have known that Suarez and Estupiñán were going to go. He just will have known that. That's the fact. He will have known that De La Feuille wasn't going to play. He's going to know that Pereira wasn't going to play. He's going to know that Decuro is going to be sacked. It's as clear as day. And, OK, he could put a little asterisk next to them and say, right, if they're still here, that's how I'll utilise them. It's a fair point, but it doesn't really excuse, I don't think, not being prepared. He had a full pre-season, as much as anyone had a pre-season, and he knows who's going to be in the squad. It's up to his job of him and his staff to talk to the owners and to understand what the likelihood is of who's going to be there and work out how he gets the best out of that team. He evidently wasn't able to do it pretty much from day one. Your point, John, about Watford being scarred, I think, is a good one. I think they're still playing like they're worried about conceding and worried about losing. They're more worried about losing than they are focused on winning, which absolutely can come from a year of turmoil and in the Premier League. You know, they were found it very, very difficult for the majority of the season and ended up battered and bruised and relegated. So to turn that round is obviously an issue. But look at who's first and look at who's second. We mentioned Bournemouth putting 5 past Huddersfield, who we've just lost 2-0 to, and Norwich are galloping off into the distance. So yes, you do get bruised by relegation, but it doesn't have to be terminal. You don't have to completely retreat into your shells.
No, but you have to deal with it properly. You have to deal with it, and it felt like Bournemouth dealt with it properly by not changing too much
because they've lost players.
Yeah, but that's not too much change. It wasn't like let's start fresh with their manager. It was
Eddie Howe, who's been at the helm for a long time and has been an intrinsic part of their rise and success, is no longer there. So they have.
But
to, let's focus on Watford,
yeah.
John.
But yeah, okay.
And his
listen to you.
His job, his job is to deal with that as the head coach. It's a difficult job, absolutely a very, very difficult job. So yes, Vladimir Ivic had a difficult job, and I recognise that. But if he can't turn that round, if he can't break that mental cycle of feeling negative or worried or not being able to express themselves, then I'm afraid he's not the right man for the job. You know, if your head teacher, John, cannot motivate his staff, then unfortunately for that head teacher, he's not doing the job, is he? If everyone in the school isn't motivated, the same in my place of work, the same with Jason's. That it's difficult. It absolutely is. You've got so much underneath you and a lot that you can't control. But that's the job. And he was clearly unable to do it. It was nowhere near good enough, as Jason said. They have at no stage, at no time, looked like a team who is likely to threaten for promotion. And there are lots of different factors involved in that. One that can be changed and changed quickly is the head coach. And it can come as absolutely no surprise to anyone that watches Watford week in, week out, that Vladimir Ivic has been dismissed. He wasn't able to mould this Watford side into anything even approaching a side that is going to be seriously challenging for promotion. We need to look at the players as well, though. We really need to look at the players. I mentioned Etienne Capoue and his own goal yesterday, and I think that sums up for me, in the main, this season so far. Indifferent, ill-disciplined and ill-focused.
But tactically, Jason, you know, there's a clip that was shared on social media with us last night from Quest, you know, Football on Quest, whatever it's called, and, you know, saying that we didn't have a definition. We didn't know what Watford was. Mm. No one knew, as a footballing team, what Watford was. Did you even get an idea about what he was trying to make us be?
It seemed to be hard to beat. And I don't know if that's come from the point of view that we were easy to beat last season. He's got hold of a bunch of players that had a losing mentality, and he needed to sort them out to be a disciplinarian. And it was to frustrate teams, I think, and then just with the pace and the supposed power that we had up front to then hit them on the counter and use our quality to then win the games. But we just didn't show that quality. And again, it's sort of going back to the problem. So whilst you can see, okay, that's the modern game, a lot of teams are set up to defend first and then hit teams on the counter. But as one of the supposed threats in that division, are there going to be that many teams that are actually going to be drawn out to actually attack us to offer anything for us to soak up? I don't think we are. And I think that's where part of the problem has come from. So the setup was hard to beat, soak it up, hit them on the counter. Against teams that aren't going to attack us anyway, that's not going to work.
I think that's a terrific assessment, Jason. I really do. And I think it's been completely borne out, hasn't it? Because and the bottom line is, Watford are better than the teams they're playing, and that's the issue. The teams are looking at Watford thinking, if we can get out of this with a point, then that's a good result, home or away for them. Watford were almost every single week completely unable to answer the question that was offered them. When we've seen teams willing to take a step forward, Brentford absolutely annihilated us in the first half with some decent football, and actually forced Watford to play some decent-ish football in the by doing so. Cardiff took a different approach, got on the front foot in a slightly less, absolutely no disrespect to Cardiff here, but a slightly less cultured way. And again, they only beat us 1-0, but the reality is they demolished us, didn't they, in terms of their strength and movement and commitment and determination to actually do something from the game. And Watford have just been made to look absolutely passive and insipid in large parts of virtually every single game. And what should have happened, and this is a failing, I think, of both head coach and players, is that they should have been out there. And while they've got the time just knocking the ball around from left to right and back, for sort of 75% of the game, they should have realised, oh, hang on a minute, this lot aren't actually that good. They're not going to ask us that many questions. We're better than them. I'm an international. You're an international. Let's roll our sleeves up, take the game to them and win it. And that at no stage had happened. And I think you're right, Jace. Our team set up knowing that they could probably get a point with fairly easily, in all honesty, and that would suit them. No supporter of any opposition team is going to be disappointed with a draw against newly relegated Watford with their well-publicised, high-quality squad, are they? And what Watford should have realised very, very quickly is that they can take these players on. They can beat these teams. And it would seemingly escaped Vladimir Ivic entirely. and also the players as well. They weren't, whether that was coached out of them or whether they weren't permitted to sort of call audibles out there and start sort of imposing themselves on the game. They were just seemingly happy to get in with a point or a 1-0 win as well. And look, I have to say, if we had looked really, really solid in picking up those 1-0 wins, ugly 1-0 wins, and we knew we were going to get them every game because that we would, I don't know, on 50 minutes we'd go all out and we'd force a goal, then retreat and defend for the rest of the game. I know that's not a real life tactic, but you know what I mean. I don't mind it being attritional if we would look like we were good at it and we would force the win, force the goal, and then shut up shop. You know, 30-1-0 wins, ugly 1-0 wins, I take it all day long. I don't mind that. I do not need to be entertained. I do not need for it to be free flowing football. I don't care if Watford get back up, brilliant. But they, at no time did they look in control of their own destiny. It was beyond flat. And Jason's point is such a good one about us not having anything to soak up and hit on the counter, because that was exactly it. There was two players. It was like the Harry Enfield sketch called One for the Sort of Slight Age Group here. But was it when Miles Chumley Warner's commentating on the football?
Yes.
He passed it to Kiko Firmino, who passed it back to Cathcart, who passed it back to Foster, who passed it to Cabaselli, who looks up, turns round and passes it back to Cathcart.
And, you know, we did that, then the opposition did it for a bit and repeat until the end of the game, really, with a few noticeable exceptions.
But what was really interesting, Mike, is that I've started putting this thing together, we're not going to play it this week, about trying to find out how other teams got promoted in recent years. And a massive part of it, which we'll hear probably maybe the next in a couple podcast time, is the fact that they all scored goals. We can't score goals because we don't have the attacking line. The one thing, though, we didn't have yesterday, not to dwell on that game too off much, but was Troy Deeney. And he's the one factor in all this that we haven't discussed. Well, we have discussed him for many, many years. On several occasions, we said, is it time for him to go? But then he's come back and he's played well and he's scored goals. And we've gone, isn't he great? And we did that last week. You and Adam had a conversation about the positivity about Troy Deeney being back in this squad and how he was on fire. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be that he wasn't on the pitch yesterday. He was on the bench to fill the bench. He was never going to go on the pitch for disciplinary reasons. Mm. That's scary, because that isn't just Ivic, and it feels like it isn't just Ivic. It feels like that's been there a very long time and it's not been dealt with.
I'm just going to pick you up on something, John. You say we haven't got the striking line, and you may have meant not available yesterday. Well, Troy Deeney, Andre Gray, Stipe Perica, who's looked good, Glenn Murray, who has got proven experience in the Championship and the Premier League, completely cast aside for I don't know why. João Pedro, Ismaila Sarr, they could all play as striker. Isaac Success!
Injured, inexperienced, or over the hill?
I think there are attacking options there. I think they've been chosen. They haven't been utilised correctly. So I take slight umbrage to that point. However, I think Troy Deeney thing yesterday is, the whole thing is bigger than that incident, but it's a useful little nugget to look at a wider malaise, I think, and a wider concern which you were getting at. Obviously, we won't know what the issue was with Troy Deeney yesterday. That will rightly be kept in house
until his book comes out.
And I don't, well, and it, a good book it will be, I'm sure, but I don't think we need to speculate on what it was. But I think you're right. I think it does point to issues throughout the club. I think the fact that Ivic was willing to sort of not throw him under the bus, but to talk about it yesterday, he knew it was going to get tongues wagging. So I doubt he would have said it if something hadn't happened. So something's obviously gone on. But we've got other, you know, we've had Andre Gray again flouting lockdown rules. He was on the pitch yesterday. There is a massive question mark over the discipline, over, I think, the culture and the commitment and the focus of the squad. Now, I don't mean everyone, but there are obviously, I think, some players in there who aren't pulling their weight, who aren't focused enough.
They are pulling their weight. They're pulling their own weight in their direction, where they want to go.
And I think So we've made the hierarchy have made the decision to get rid of Vladimir Ivic. I think Vladimir Ivic, he's had the same problem as Nigel Pearson. He's had the same problem as Javi. He had the same problem as Matt Sarri. He's had the same problem as Kike Sanchez-Flores. At some time, whether it's once as soon as they've got to safety, got to an FA Cup final, they've all had issues getting this team to keep going. And that's a problem. And that speaks, they've never driven on till the end of the season. They've never gone the extra mile. They've never rolled their sleeves up and said, look, lads, this could be one of the best seasons in Watford's history. If we just stick with it and really focus. That's never happened. No manager, no head coach in this era has managed to do that. That's been a constant thorn in our side. We've talked, you know, post-Christmas from the rookery ends have always been, let's hope this slide doesn't happen that happened the year before. And every season it started from the start, and this year it's just carried on. Now, we've had lots of different head coaches in that time. Ivic, the disciplinarian, Pearson and Shakespeare, the decent man manager, Kike coming back, knows the place, knows the players, Matt Sarri, the master tactician, Silva, the good footballer, Javi, the nice guy. None of them have managed to get a consistent tune out of this Watford side. Now, you cannot tell me that, and people will say that Watford haven't been backed in the transfer market. Sure, they've made massive mistakes and there's gaps in the squad. But you cannot tell me that there aren't decent players there that aren't performing to their the level they should be. All too often, their people are phoning it in on the pitch. So you dread to think, if they're phoning it in on the pitch, what are they doing off it, right? Because the 90 minutes is the time that footballers love. You know, we've seen Ben Foster's videos and how excited he gets on a match day. That's the time they come to life. So you can hate training, you can hate the spotlight, you can hate whatever about being a footballer, but those 90 minutes are your time to shine. So if they're not doing it then, what the hell are they doing when they're having to roll out of bed and bust a gut doing laps and boring drills and stuff? There is something amiss in that squad. And we need to root out people. If it said he'd do it at the start, it's obviously more difficult than that because you can't just get rid of players. You know, if you try to sell them and play, and other teams don't want them, you're stuck with them. But we've made a difficult decision with the head coach, so we're going to face all the brickbats that come with another managerial change. They now need to make a difficult decision with the January transfer window coming up. They need to root out the bad wood. And I don't care if it's someone who has a monetary value, a perceived monetary value. I don't care if it's someone who has got perceived quality. If you are not prepared to put a shift in during training, if you're not prepared to be an ambassador for the club, if you're not prepared to try and help your teammates, and if you are not prepared to give it all on the pitch, you need to be gone. That is what is dragging this team and dragging this club and dragging this decent squad down. And it doesn't matter who comes in as head coach, Pep Guardiola or Willy Wonka. If you do not get rid of the bad elements of this squad, we are going to see the same time and time again. And I am sick of it. I would rather finish fourth from bottom with a team that goes out and busts a gut and gives it everything than a team that swans around with seemingly absolutely no comeback, just waste their talent, waste our time, and squanders the legacy that we were so close to having in place at Watford. They've got rid of the head coach, fine. He wasn't the right man for the job, I don't think. It was the right decision. Now let's make the really tricky decisions and root out these bad, bad eggs that are ruining our football club at the moment. This isn't necessarily Troy Deeney for me. I'm using that little story as a catalyst. There's obviously things like that happening far too often, and I will not put up with it anymore. People are stopping watching Watford, right? And there's a reason for that, and it's not all down to... people feel detached. And they're physically detached, but they will continue to feel detached while they feel that the players aren't giving it their all. They're not doing it properly. They're living our dreams for us, and they're not doing it. And people will just switch off because it's not good enough.
The thing is, you say it's the players, and that absolutely has to happen. But it isn't just there. You use the word culture. And the culture of this team, this squad, this club isn't right and hasn't been for a while. And that lands only at one person's feet. And that's Gino Pozzo, the aloof Gino Pozzo, who at this point needs to speak. He needs to explain himself, not through Scott Duxbury. He needs to say that, hello lads, I'm Gino, I'm going to change things. Because he's this character who we have no idea what he's about at all. And I get why you want to keep him separate, but this feels like for the first time where he does need to say something. Because if you go on what him and Scott and the club have been doing, it's insanity. Repeating the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, is the definition of insanity. And it just doesn't make sense without him standing up and saying, look, we are changing it. This is why we're changing it. This is what we're thinking. He needs to share something with the club, or else it will look like, because we don't have the detail behind him, like it's insanity.
We had that statement from Duxbury in the summer, didn't we? Or supposedly joint statement from Duxbury and Gino saying, yes, we've done things wrong. We got it wrong. Now we're going to make it right and do what we need to do to get back to the Premier League. And that just feels like a load of fluff at the moment. It just feels like they were just putting words out there just to try and placate us, because it doesn't look like anything's changed. And I think you're right. We need Gino to stand up and actually front up and tell us what the plan is.
I mean, I disagree very, very slightly. I mean, I think in terms of the plan with Ivic, it was clear. Disciplinarian and stop shipping goals. Because similar to when we, you know, very controversially got rid of Slavisa Jokanović after getting promotion and brought in Kike. So that was a very clear decision, because Kike was a much more pragmatic head coach, as was shown in those first couple of games in the Premier League. We kept it tight, we got draws, and then incrementally got better and managed to win games. So there was a plan there, and it worked. And I think there was a plan here with Ivic coming in to be tough, to deal with some of the players who perhaps aren't as focused as they should be, and to keep it tight and to take it from there. So there was obviously some sort of plan. It obviously didn't work out. So, and we know what's going to happen. It's come as no surprise. I think how different would it be if Gino said something, John? People would like to hear from him, but what's he going to say? I'll tell you what he's going to say is, we're going to do our level best to bring in a head coach that can get the best out of the group of players that we have at our disposal as we bid to return to the Premier League.
That's a statement. We don't need a statement. We need him here. He needs a conversation with somebody. I'm not saying it's someone not in the club. He needs a conversation with somebody, because he's been at this club, but we have no idea about him. And now is the time. I was all right with it for a bit, but I think we need to hear from him.
I don't want to get caught up in arguing about that point, because I think he's obviously made lots of mistakes, because the culture underneath him is evidently wrong. And that, so the buck does stop with him, and that's why they do need to make changes, and they need to be wholesale ones, I think, because otherwise it's just going to be, you know, a death spiral, isn't it? That, you know, the players just get increasingly uninspired. New head coach, on and on and on, and Watford don't get to where they need to be. So the bottom line is the buck does stop there, because the club isn't working, is it? The playing staff aren't performing to the level they should be, and we keep having to change a head coach because of that. So it's nothing will change unless they stop that. The playing staff need to perform. So have they delivered a good enough squad is the question. If they haven't, what are they doing to make sure that the squad they do have performs to their absolute premium ability, give their absolute all? Is the head coach, knowing the squad that they've got, because a lot of them have been there for a long time, so knowing the personalities, knowing the issues that are there, if they haven't been able to move them on, are they bringing in a head coach that can deal with it? So you could argue they've failed to a degree on all three. They haven't got the right squad. They haven't been able to get. They haven't been able to fully understand how this squad works and to deal with them and to get the best out of them. And they haven't. They evidently haven't been able to source a head coach that can deal with them. The man that signs the checks, the man that makes the ultimate decisions, in my understanding, is going to be Gino. And it's all gone wrong, hasn't it? You know, we're still in touch at the top. Nearly 10 points off the first place, so they're disappearing into distance. We are still in touch at the top, so it's not like the wheels have completely fallen off the car, but it feels like we've been driving down the M1 for quite a few junctions now with three flat tyres. And Gino's at the wheel. He needs to pull over. His car needs a very, very, very solid MOT. They need to look inwards and they need to think, right, what have we done wrong here? They've done an awful lot right. Yeah, they just have. And a lot of it's been down to luck, but a lot of sport is down to luck. A lot is down to circumstance. It's about that little sprinkle of, you know, a little bit of luck and a little bit of good fortune and a little bit of things coming together. You can't, it's not an exact science. So they've got it right sometimes. They've got it wrong sometimes too. Now it's starting to look like they're getting it wrong on a regular basis, doesn't it? The last three head coaches have, you know, they've ended in a sort of slightly bizarre fashion, really, haven't they? Kike coming back was an odd one.
Well, the three flat tyres called a crash.
Yeah. Well, it feels like we could be at the moment if something doesn't change. And those three elements, get the squad, get the people right, get the squad right, the talent right. I don't think we're far off that, really, for a tilt at the championship. You could argue that, you know, about left back, this, that and the other. This squad, I'm sorry, on paper, is good enough to be challenging better than it is. So the second question is, how do you get this lot to perform? And they're failing in that. So where's the discipline? Where's the culture where these players know that failure isn't an option, where they know that second best isn't good enough, where they know that disciplinary issues aren't going to be tolerated? Where's that? And where's the ability to find a coach that can come in and implement that for them? It's folding underneath them at the moment, and they need to deal with that. Now, whether we hear from Gino saying that is, it's by the by for me. I understand exactly where you're coming from, and to call him aloof, I think, is perhaps a bit strong as well. The fact he chooses not to talk to the press, I think, you know, he's right. And, you know, I don't think he's got anything other than the best interests at Watford at heart. But at the moment, the decisions are the wrong ones, and we've ended up at a situation where, and culture is the right word, is all wrong. Is all wrong. There's some hard work required to fix it. Gino and Scott need to look at themselves, how they change that culture within the club, and how they make that decision-making process on bringing someone in, that we don't need to change them again in 18 games, half a year, whatever. It just simply can't continue. It feels like the club is rotting to me, and that might be going a little bit over the top, but that's what it feels like. It feels like nothing, we're not pulling together. In the best times, it feels like everyone's pulling together. The supporters are on board, the managers are on board, the team are giving it everything, the subs are doing all they can to get game time. You know, we're winning some games, we're coming up short against others, but then we do better in the next game. There's none of that. If anything else, it feels like we're getting sucked into a quicksand of mediocrity and finger pointing, all of our own making. Stand up, be strong, get rid of the nonsense. Let people know that this is a club that's going places, but do that by your actions. Do that by setting the tone. Do that by letting people know that second best won't be tolerated. Misbehaviour won't be tolerated. Poor discipline won't be tolerated. And bring in a coach, then he knows that players will have to act at a certain level or they will not be playing for Watford Football Club. That is difficult, but owning a football club and getting one into the Premier League is difficult. They need to work hard. They need to make difficult decisions, and the time to do it is now.
We're the Orns, you're the Orns. Come on, you Orns!
So what actually did happen after that game against Huddersfield? Well, we're lucky to have Adam Leventhal as part of the From the Rookery team. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. And Adam's full piece about what happened is on theathletic.com. And of course, you can get a subscription if you do not have one at the moment by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend, where at the moment you can get your own subscription and you can gift a subscription to a friend or family member, maybe a last minute Christmas present. But Mike caught up with Adam to find out what he found out about the hours after the Huddersfield Town game and who might be filling that role of Watford head coach. But Adam knew something was wrong when he arrived at the John Smith Stadium yesterday.
I was literally the first person in the press box. I got an earlier train up and I got to the stadium and it's beautiful, tree lined. And I sort of got sort of carried away with the sort of the beauty of it all. But then, you know, the press box was filling up around me. And then eventually, you know, there was a classic sort of mix up of passes and someone had been given my seat and all this sort of stuff. And long story short, it meant that I actually had to sit in the back row, had a comfy seat, which was nice, in the back row of the director's box. And then that means that you're even closer to the hierarchy of both clubs. Huddersfield's are very loud. It's like they've got a sort of a fan group in there. And then Watford's hierarchy was, you know, Gino Pozzo, Cristiano Giaretta and Scott Duxbury. And they weren't far in front of me, actually. So it was unavoidable to see their emotions throughout the game. And as it panned out, I think their frustrations just sort of bubbled up and up and up. And then inevitably, something was going to happen after the game.
My son was watching Lemony Snicket's unfortunate series of events yesterday, which I thought was rather apt, bearing in mind what we saw unfold at the John Smith Stadium. And what's your understanding, Adam, of what happened after the game? What happened with Vlad ultimately?
Well, I think it's a combination of issues, and it wasn't just down to the performance at Huddersfield. I think certain elements of the day obviously did have an impact. Obviously, the issue with Troy Deeney, which you know the club have spoken about since, and I've learnt some details about, especially surrounding the build-up to the game, and it has to do with, you know, them potentially setting up a meeting to discuss the fact that he'd been dropped, and Deeney went to see him, and Ivic wasn't there, and that seemingly has sort of helped to cool the relationship between the two. That was obviously an issue. I think ultimately having a player who has scored in three consecutive games, being your leader, being your most motivational player on the pitch and not playing him, you're taking a stand, and ultimately you run the risk of cutting off your nose to spite your face. And, you know, if you're playing Andre Gray up top by himself, who's not in great form, you know, you're leaving Stipe Perica on the bench with Deeney when potentially Deeney and Perica as a partnership may well have been actually far better. You're making things more difficult for yourself. And I think that that's at the crux of the issue with Ivic in the eyes of the hierarchy. Look, they knew what they were getting when they appointed him, but he didn't necessarily deliver as he was learning the territory in the Championship. I think the fact that he was basically making things more complicated than the Championship almost deserves. You know, playing a possession-based game and, you know, trying to break down teams that are able to ultimately get two banks of five in front of you if you're passing the ball around the back, it makes it very, very difficult. You know, playing to your strengths. And I think the hierarchy got pretty fed up with the fact that they were losing an identity, really. You know, you've got good attacking players. You've got Saar, you've got Sema, who like to get chalk on their boots and run at defenders. They were tucking in far too often and they were getting lost in a congested sort of central area of the pitch. And that's very frustrating.
That chimes true with me as well as a supporter. I think the identity thing is something that is absolutely spot on. The Watford have completely lost their identity. And as Jason and I and John spoke, I think we would totally agree. Make it far too complicated. Playing against, and mean this with all due respect, inferior sides and making it much, much harder than it had to be. And with that in mind, Adam, how quickly do you think questions were being asked by Scott and Gino about this disappointment?
I think that they were willing to give him time, obviously. And I think that they also were very sort of impressed with the way that he did deal with some difficult situations, especially early on. You know, a lot of players waiting to leave the club, a lot of uncertainty, you know, effectively getting on with things when he didn't, you know, get delivered the left back that he wanted to, you know, in the absence of Messina and losing Estupiñán and things like that. And maybe not getting an extra creative midfielder that he would have wanted. I think ultimately they would have been sort of impressed with that side of things, and at the same time collecting points. you know, a difficult time, right? Let's sort of all adjust to this new league, right? Well, at least we're picking up points. It's not pretty, but, you know, I'm sure it will improve. But then I think that too many times, and this is, you know, one of the elements of the piece that I've written for The Athletic, but I think it's almost went a bit further than simply the style of play, which wasn't working, even when some of the more senior players were coming back. And let's not forget, you know, he has had to deal with the COVID issue as well and having players drop out at the last minute. You know, Kiko Femenia was the last one. We've had other senior players as well. Will Hughes hasn't been available and he could have made a really big difference. But I think that the squad did have issues in relation to certain things like the time that they were being given to recover. And yes, it was a very relentless schedule, but I think the feeling that I got from speaking to various sources was that there could have been a little bit more breather time built in, not only for physical you know, well-being, but also mental well-being as well. I think everyone's sort of going through the mill a little bit, and to feel that you're sort of coming to work and you're being sort of, you know, heavily drilled, and it's all getting a little bit monotonous, just getting a little bit too much. That's the impression that I got from speaking to some of the people that have, you know, had an insight into what it's been like in the dressing room. So I think that was a key issue as well. So it was just sort of a gradual attritional feeling, which basically came to a head at Huddersfield.
As you say, Adam, it all came to a head at Huddersfield yesterday. And what's your understanding of events that unfolded leading up to that statement, just confirming that he'd gone?
The post-match interview was very interesting. It also told a story as well of another thing that I've sort of found out from speaking to various sources that know what's going on in the dressing room over the last sort of couple of months, that Vladimir Ivic, you know, after a disappointing day at the office, was out of the dressing room like a flash. There wasn't like a big inquest. There wasn't a lot of words said. And I think that that's been a little bit surprising to some of the players in the dressing room that there hasn't. But the silent treatment, I can understand sometimes when there is a performance where you almost want to put it back onto the players and go, look, guys, that wasn't good enough, and I'm going to leave it to you to stew on. You can use that as a tool. I'm sure it's been used by, you know, bigger and better managers and lesser managers than Vladimir Ivic over the years. But I think that if that becomes a trend and you're almost trying to sort of create a band of brothers sort of or a siege mentality environment, not giving feedback and not almost going, look, lads, I know we weren't at the best today, but come on, we'll get back on the training ground on Monday. We'll go again, the old cliche. But at least there is that sort of cajoling element. You know, if you compare it to the sort of the words of Ben Foster when he's on the Cycling GK at the end of games, when he's trying to be upbeat. Yes, sometimes that can be a little bit saccharine sweet and a little bit unnecessary, but if it's coming for your manager and you've got that sort of motivator, then, you know, I think that can be a good thing sometimes. I don't know. I can understand that sometimes that sort of reserved and sort of cold, steely glare can work at times. And I don't think that the dressing room was completely united in, you know, not buying into his methods. I don't think that was the case at all. But I just think, you know, going back to a post-match feeling, that sometimes you just need to be able to sort of disarm yourself and go, all right, lads, yeah, look, we weren't at the races today, but come on, we're all human, we'll try our best next time. So if you can at least change the gears when you're giving the feedback, then I think that does help. But going back to your original question, you know, he came up to do the press conference, obviously the discipline issue he mentioned about Troy Deeney, and I asked him, you know, I said, you know, in these sort of circumstances, when a head coach and a captain go head to head, something has to give. And give him his due, it was probably the first time that I saw him let his guard down a little bit and speak in the sort of way that I would with sort of a friend when they're showing you their true emotion. And he sort of smiled, he sort of chewed up his face a little bit and sort of went, well, I don't know what the outcome's going to be. You know, and, you know, I know my responsibility. I'm a head coach. That's my answer. So I think he was quite philosophical in that sort of snapshot moment. And I think that probably told a story because, you know, a couple of hours later, he got a call from the hierarchy, was told that he was going to be no longer needed. and that it was going to be down to the lawyers and, you know, his representative to sort out the severance between him and the club, and the club move on, and they're going to have a new man in charge by the Norwich game. Fingers crossed, if they can get, you know, around all the various regulations, and if it's a foreign coach coming in, which we understand it's going to be, then they've got to get on with it. And I think that they pretty much had made the call by half time, because there was one other thing, and this is going back to sort of sitting at sort of such close proximity to that hierarchy, you know, and I know that it must sort of feel like I'm a right nosy Parker. I mean, I've got a decent beak on me, but, you know, I just think that, you know, it's like I couldn't avoid but look. It was so obvious in front of me that, you know, Cristiano Giretta, who's obviously the sporting director, and he does this often. This isn't new. You know, we'll just go down to the technical area at half time, watch what the substitutes are doing at half time, blah 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 blah. And he checked in with one of Ivic's assistants just to sort of say, oh, you know, what's going on. And I remember that Adam Messina had sort of stripped his bottom half down to shorts and socks. Otherwise, that would have been quite a revelation. There's no fans here. I can do what I want. No, but he'd stripped down. So it looked as if he was going to be coming on. So there seemed to be sort of some questioning as to, OK, well, right, fine. I understand that. But then he came back up and he was speaking to Duxbury and to Gino Pozzo. And there sort of seemed to be a bit of, you know, a bit of a heated discussion as to, well, hang on, what, he's not doing this, or he's not doing that, or he's not doing this. And a bit of like, come on, you know, it's been a poor first half, we need to change things. And then I think that probably then sort of started to re-highlight the fact that, hang on a minute, we're not going to see Deeney today, we're not going to maybe be using someone that could make a difference. But then, to be fair to Ivic, in that second half, switched to a back four, and Watford were more purposeful. They did have opportunities. They could have got back into the game, but I just sort of think that the die had already been cast, to be honest. And I think it was a drip, drip, drip from 4 months of sort of soullessness, really. And I think that Watford eventually was sort of, they were playing in Ivic's image, and it wasn't, you know, great to watch, really, was it, in the end?
You mentioned drip, 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 and I think that summed it up quite nicely, because in that second half, Ivic did have his hood up on his Watford coat for a bit there. Yeah. And I thought, oh, crikey, it's going to take more than that to protect you from what's coming. A little bit disappointed, Adam, you didn't tell me when you were talking about the three chaps sat in front of you, that you didn't tell me that when he got back to his seat, opened up his phone and just Googled available managers. That would have been a nice a nice little bow on the end of that. So Ivic is gone, Adam, and you did allude there to the fact that they have got potentially someone in their sights. Where are we at with that at the moment? What do you know about who might be coming in to replace Vladimir Ivic?
Well, I know that they want to appoint a young, motivational coach. You know, Gino Pozzo's perspective, we need a bit of sort of up and atom and a bit of energy and a bit of motivation. And I think that that's now what they are looking for. I know that there have been initial discussions held with a man called Cisco Munoz, who some people may recognise his name because he was a good player back in the day, playing for Valencia under the stewardship of Rafa Benitez when they won La Liga in 2003-04. They also won the UEFA Cup as well. He sort of puts Rafa Benitez down as sort of one of his inspirations, having had sort of success on the field with him. He also played in La Liga for other sides, Real Betis, Tenerife, Recreativo, Levante as well. And then he actually went out and played in Georgia for Dynamo Tbilisi, and he ended up managing there as well over the last couple of years. So that's where he's been managing. He won the league last year, having taken over in August, had a reputation for attacking football, playing, you know, 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2, being sort of up and at him, focusing on the attacking third rather than sort of the Ivic style of possession-based football. There is a slight issue with his coaching licence. He's got a UEFA A licence, which is very good, but he doesn't have his pro licence yet. If you're working in the Premier League, you need your pro licence. If you're working up to championship level, a UEFA A licence is absolutely fine. Now, there is some sort of uncertainty, and I don't know this for definite as we speak at 12:55 on Sunday afternoon, whether he is the lone man that is going to be taking charge. But I do know that they're seemingly not particularly bothered about a big name coming in or someone that knows the territory. I think that they are thinking, look, we've got a strong enough squad with someone to come in, play to the strengths of the squad. And I mean, I do sound like a broken record. We've been in this situation so many times where they feel the hierarchy that basically what they need is a manager to play to the strengths of the team. But at this time, I think it really, really does just need to be as simple as that. You know, get your best players in the best positions and don't overcomplicate things. And I think probably improve the feel-good factor around the squad. And if this guy, Munoz, can come in, if it's him by himself or him as an assistant to someone else, he actually shares an agent with Javi Gracia. I don't think it's going to be him making an emotional return, but there are a couple of other sort of more senior coaches that have worked in Spain that are on their books. So it might be a combination, but it might just be Munoz by himself. He might be the man for the job.
On that, Adam, what would you say to Watford supporters who are hearing this, are heading to Wikipedia and yes, seeing a decent playing career, but then looking at his managerial career, it's in its infancy, shall we say, being charitable. And, you know, Dinamo Tbilisi, professional club, not going to fill many people with too much enthusiasm and excitement, though. And, you know, Gymnastique in Spain, you know, he hasn't really been there. He hasn't really done it as a manager. And as we've said, you know, week in, week out on the podcast, these are incredibly difficult circumstances anyway. Watford have contrived to make the situation at the club sort of a little bit more complicated than it perhaps should be. You know, what would you say, and I know this is a big question, but what would you say to supporters who are saying they need to bring in experience, they need to bring in a strong head coach that can grab this group of players who you rightly say are talented and not just mould them, but absolutely batter them into shape, because that's what it looks like is required. And, you know, I quite rightly and understandably can hear supporters scratching their heads saying, to get Watford back into the Premier League, is someone who's managed for a year at Dinamo Tbilisi really the answer here?
Yeah, I get that argument. But then I suppose you can use other examples of managers that have just come fresh out of the game. Yeah, you don't need to be some vastly experienced head coach. I mean, you look at sort of, you know, the likes of Daniel Farke at Norwich, who came from the background in Germany. Likewise with David Wagner as well, with Huddersfield. Ironically, you know, he got them up. You don't have to be vastly experienced. You just need to have a clear philosophy. It does show that you can bring in a person that isn't a big name and they can have an impact. And I think we also know that the way that the club is run, and this isn't going to change, the buck stops with Gino Pozzo. If he doesn't like what's going on, he's going to make a change. We can't pretend that this is going to be any different in the future until he vacates the role. But I suppose he will be thinking, this is my football club. I've put in a decent whack of money here and there along the way. Yeah, I'm sure he's made a decent amount of money as well, being, you know, in the Premier League over the last 5 years as well. But this is his ship. He's the captain and he wants to make his choices. And ultimately, look, if he doesn't get back into the Premier League and Watford end up languishing in the Championship, then that's what he is going to have as well. Looking into the January transfer window, if you've got some players that you think, right, they're not actually delivering here, either, yes, they can leave, or if you think that they're good enough and they should be playing better, you want to sort of eradicate any excuse that they might have to go, you know what, I'm not enjoying this, I'm getting out of here. If you bring in a new manager that invigorates the place and they are playing better football, then they're probably more inclined to stay. So I'm thinking about the likes of maybe Etienne Capoue, although I don't think that he is wanting to leave middle of the season. Maybe more like Ismail Assar, who's sort of looked a shadow of himself of late. Get him playing in his preferred position out on the right-hand side and enjoying football again. And I think that's important going into a January transfer window, which they need to keep their best players if they really do want to push on and get back into the Premier League.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
Thank you very much to Adam, to Mike, to Jason for being part of this podcast. Thank you for listening. Do remember to follow us on social medias at Watford Podcast on Twitter, Facebook and on Instagram. And of course, whenever this thing changes, whenever we find out who is going to be the new man in charge of Watford, we'll probably be back with another podcast to find out a little bit more about them. Do not expect a podcast after the Norwich game on Boxing Day because, well, we can celebrate Christmas with just our very small amounts of family and we want to make sure we spend that time with them, those that we are allowed to see. So thank you so much for all your support. We're back with another podcast before the end of the year and the roller coaster of life following Watford FC continues and we'll be back very soon. Merry Christmas to you, all your friends and your family.